We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time. With working from home and trying to stay in touch with friends and family, a million pressing social issues, and an expectation to always be on 24/7. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. My moment to chill is watching baseball, especially when the White Sox are on. I like to have a Coors Light beside me. It's a great beer to have watching the games, as it's cool and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. And even the mountains on my cans turn blue, telling me that it's time to hit reset. Sit back, relax, and hunker down for an evening of White Sox baseball. So when it's time for you to unwind, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Must be 21 years or older to enjoy. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate responsibly.
From your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
Hello, welcome to Sox Machine Live, everyone. I am Josh Nelson alongside Jim Margulis. I know we're a little bit more zoomed in than usual when it comes to our videos on YouTube. Can you see me now? For those that are listening to the podcast version of this episode, you are missing out as far as the all the things that we do on the video side, being goofy a little bit as far as webcam, Jim and I. And you can actually watch the stream either on SoxMachine.com or on our YouTube page at YouTube.com/SoxMachine. So you can join in on the fun and you can post your live comments and questions. We'll address them as we go through here with Sox Machine Live. And I'm sorry, Jim, there's just not a lot to talk about when it comes to Chicago White Sox. This is going to be a pretty boring episode.
Did you let it all air out over Twitter Spaces? Yeah. I understand those got a little fiery.
Oh, just a bit. Just a bit. I apologize because I know some people joined the Twitter Spaces and they just want – I'm trying to use it as like a – not as like as a feeder, but an opportunity to continue the conversation about the White Sox and also bring in other voices from White Sox Twitter and White Sox blogs to talk about the White Sox when we don't get a lot of opportunities to do so. I was really fired up with what happened with the Yermín Mercedes home run fallout. I was hopeful that after the game, it wasn't going to be a big deal. I was wrong. It became a big deal. And even though all the articles and the hoopla from Tuesday night to Wednesday morning, and Wednesday morning La Russa doubled down, the timeline is starting to get hazy for me from a Chicago media perspective. But yeah, if you follow me on Twitter and you join the Twitter spaces, I made it well known of how much I dislike just the way that Tony La Russa addressed everything. Addressed as far as the way that he spoke about Yermin Mercedes, how he was totally fine that the Minnesota Twins threw at his player. And we're going to get into that. So, Jim, let's start as far as where you stand right now as far as the Tony La Russa and the Yermin Mercedes home run fallout.
Well, I'm, you know, when it comes to like Twitter spaces and instant reaction audio wise, I'm glad I set it out just because, you know, the good Lord presented us with series to digest a baseball season in. So I like waiting to the end just to kind of better contextualize everything that happened in a given city or a given set against a team. And I think the way they responded with a 2-1 victory, you know, looking barely adequate against a, you know, average at best right-handed starter, and Lucas Giolito looking good, like everything was restored to normal. And then they went on the road trip afterwards looking like Yoan Moncada. And it seemed like, you know, not necessarily all's well that ends well, but basically like almost like La Russa was irrelevant to what the team, what the players are trying to do. Like they disagree. The players have Mercedes back. La Russa really doesn't. And it's more or less, they're fine with that. Or at least the players will take care of what they feel they need to take care of or what La Russa is not taking care of. And La Russa is just letting them be. And almost like, you know, La Russa just wants to be this guardian of baseball the way it was. And that's what he's concerned about. The players are concerned about, you know, making sure that a key player of their lineup doesn't get hurt. And that, mm-hmm. you know, players with similar interests, like say like Tim Anderson, who is very much a vanguard of the, you know, I guess younger baseball movement of being expressive on the field, that he doesn't, that, you know, I guess throwing it Mercedes doesn't make it okay later to throw at Anderson or anybody else who wants to show themselves a little bit on the field. So it seems like there are two different interests and they're more or less like letting each other, I guess, handle their own things. It's just, you know, it kind of undercuts the idea of a manager being in charge of the team if he's not really overseeing that aspect of protecting players like that.
Yeah, I just can't believe it. You're the Chicago White Sox manager, Jim. A Minnesota Twins pitcher has just thrown at your player intentionally. Mm-hmm. You can't be cool with that at all. They're your biggest rival. Okay.
Yeah.
This whole situation, like I personally apologize to the Twins for what? They're not going to show you mercy. I remember a 20-1 beatdown from the Minnesota Twins in 2009. Detroit's not going to show you mercy. Cleveland's not going to show you mercy. Kansas City's not going to show you mercy. There were two blowouts today. The Giants didn't show the Reds mercy. The Rays didn't show the Orioles mercy. Nobody shows mercy anymore in Major League Baseball, Tony. So I don't know where he's coming from in that standpoint of quote unquote sportsmanship.
Yeah. Well, I thought the apology beforehand was like, and there are a couple of real, you know, questionable, sketchy, paternalistic things he said, like about, you know, thinking about spanking Mercedes and saying he's clueless, which is not a thing you want to say about a foreign born player. Cause that's a really loaded statement when you started to, mentioning somebody who's being, especially like Mercedes has been around a while. He's like kind of his, he has his own legend in the Caribbean series and in the Caribbean leagues, the winter leagues. So he's been on big platforms based on the levels he's been allowed to reach. Mm-hmm. So he's not clueless. Like, you know, he has his own understanding of how he wants to do things, but it's, you don't use that word for a guy like him. So, I mean, he already said those things, but if you consider his age and whatnot, just think, okay, he's not going to say anything. Yeah. You can maybe cut him a bit of slack or just shrug it off and roll your eyes and move on. But I thought that was maybe an elegant way to try to get out ahead of it and prevent a pitch from being thrown at him to where, like, if the Twins did not try to retaliate afterwards, he can say, well, that's why I did it. You know, I just wanted to cool, you know, temperatures of the room. And this is the, you know, what my experience in my Hall of Fame ring says I should do. And, you know, you can roll your eyes at that too, but at least there would be a reason for it. But once Tyler Duffy threw at or behind Mercedes, that's where you say, okay, that didn't work. Now I have to call him out on it. Now I have to say that's, you know, unacceptable, and that's why I apologize, you know, retract the apology, or, you know, at the very least just say like, well, now I know, and we, you know, hopefully the league will handle it. And if not, we will handle it the next time out. Just say something like that. And sure enough, Tyler Duffy got suspended 3 games. So the league thought that Tyler Duffy was throwing intentionally and La Russa did not. That is weird. And I've never seen, like, you know, when I was reading about La Russa with the Cardinals and such, and remembering that he really was annoying to Cubs fans and Brewers fans and everybody else in that division, it was basically because he would like throwing at guys, and then he would play dumb whenever, you know, afterwards. And then, you know, at the reverse happened, and one of his players is thrown at, he would basically just, you know, bang pots and pans and try to get the league's attention and say, yeah, you know, pull out the fainting couch and pretend like, oh, this is not supposed to happen with sportsmanship. That's why, you know, a lot of people are rolling their eyes at sportsmanship, because he, you know, he would bend the rules to his liking, or, you know, he was no stranger to extrajudicial matters. And so to see him just, you know, do a 180 on that and basically take the Twins side, almost like he ordered it. Like, he was the one who ordered the plunking, was trying to play dumb about it. That I've never seen before. And that's what I think is really disconcerting. Now, it's amazing that the White Sox kind of moved on and pretend nothing happened, or at least like the players did. And it almost seems like they just, it's almost like an embarrassing relative in the family who just says things that they, you know, just, oh, that's Uncle Tony. And then you're just trying to change the subject and move along, but nobody really takes him seriously. And that's what it feels like. It just, you know, they just account on him embarrassing himself every 10 to 14 days and hope that their talent changes the subject.
Yeah, Lucas Giolito's answer, right, when he was asked about it. And we'll talk about his start in Minneapolis, because that is very noteworthy, and it is worth a conversation how well Lucas Giolito pitched. But Giolito said, no negativity. We love Yermin. We love home runs. We are moving forward. That's it. No negativity, i.e., I'm not talking about Tony. Mm-hmm. that's how I took it away. And I think you're right, Jim. The players are bottling up, because it's like one of those situations that with your significant other or a friend, if they do something that makes you mad or puts you in a bad mood and they ask you, what's wrong? And you say, I'm fine. It's like the most loaded statement in the world. I'm fine. No, I'm not fine. But this is not a good time to air out why you have made me mad. I am trying to keep the vibes as positive as possible. And by me saying I'm fine or no negativity, we are moving on. They don't want to talk about this topic at the moment. Mm-hmm. They want to talk about the fact that they won another series against the Minnesota Twins. They're hopping on a flight and they are heading to New York, and they got two tough series coming up against the New York Yankees and the St. Louis Cardinals. Let's talk about that. I can totally understand that from a White Sox player's perspective.
Well, I just wonder if they, you know, like, I think everybody can agree, at least on the outside, that La Russa is a weird dude. Like, just, you know, he's weird. Like, that's the only word that comes to mind, is that he just says and does, like, he's not engaged the way managers are with the action. He wasn't hired the right way. Like, only one guy really wants him around. Like, everything about a situation is weird. He doesn't present himself like in a really accessible way or a friendly way, or just like he's kind of antagonistic to reporters, and the players just seem to kind of shrug him. So I just wonder if there's like an understanding in the clubhouse to where like, this is just something we have to endure. You know, you know, fortunately it's like the White Sox, so nobody gets fired. If Jerry Reinsdorf likes everybody, nobody gets fired. And people in previous generations of the team have had to figure out how to coexist or not coexist, like in the case of like Robin Ventura and Ozzie Guillen and their fighting with Kenny Williams, or Adam LaRoche is fighting Chris, like basically like, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't actually change people, like change out people during the course of a season. So things are the way they are. And I guess things are as bad or as rotten as you allow it to be. So I'm guessing La Russa is going to be himself, because he seems kind of impervious to public feedback and pressure. And so the players are probably like just among themselves, probably thinking like, if we pretend to listen to him, but we just play for each other and generally just try to, you know, make sure that we don't let each other down, we'll be okay. That's just kind of how it strikes me right now.
Yeah. Is my name in the lineup? Okay. I'm good to go. Yeah. am I in the bullpen? Or is it my day to pitch? Okay. I'll get myself ready. Or it's my turn to start.
I want to play good defense for this pitcher on the mound. I want to make sure I don't give up runs when my offense scores. Like, just, you know, I think over the course of the nine innings, they feel like they know their obligations and who they're playing for. It doesn't feel like they're playing for La Russa. And I guess, you know, part of me wonders or is thinking, like, that's kind of a testament to Rick Renteria in a way that, you know, when it, with this culture building, like, he kind of set the team up to where it can maybe manage himself if that's exactly what's going on.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. But as far as playing for the 26, Steve Stone is tweeting out, and he is no stranger to publicly calling out the teams that he is broadcasting for. But he's not necessarily calling them out. He's just proving a point from his experiences, not just as a player, but also his very long broadcasting experience as well. Some good teams, some not good teams, that not everybody in the clubhouse is going to like each other. We know that. That's with every single workplace, no matter where you are in this world. There are people that you're going to like working with. There are people that you do not like working with. But you have to figure out how to work as a team. And, you know, Stone was trying to make that point on Twitter today, that it is really up to the 26 guys that are wearing the White Sox uniform to decide on how far this team's going to go. It's not Tony La Russa. It is the 26 guys that are playing almost every single day. They have to play for each other, and they have to be united in one goal, which is to try to win a world championship in 2021. When it comes to the narrative, especially with Tony La Russa, and I thought he put it perfectly, saying, I am oblivious to what is being said about me out in the media, is perfect. Like, you want a nickname for Tony La Russa in 2021? Captain Oblivious is perfect for La Russa. He's oblivious on how extra inning rules work. He's oblivious how modern day baseball plays. He's oblivious to how the culture is in today's game. He is oblivious. And I think you make a lot of good points, Jim, as far as the future for this White Sox and how they're going to have to press on, that it's the 26 guys. For White Sox fans, it kind of sucks. You know, it's like, well, I'm not really rooting for the manager, but I'm also rooting that he makes good decisions and he makes good lineups and he makes good choices as far as coming out of the bullpen, because we kind of need him to do that because he's calling the shots. But it's just so, it's so interesting to me about the narrative. Frank Thomas was cool with the Yermín Mercedes home run. Ozzie Guillen was cool with the Yermín Mercedes home run. Steve Stone and Jason Benetti were cool with the Yermín Mercedes home run. The White Sox players are obviously cool with the Yermín Mercedes home run. Lance Lynn, the last guy I expected, is cool with the Yermín Mercedes home run.
Lance Lynn is a millennial.
Well, that's true. Yeah, we're older than Lance Lynn.
Yeah.
La Russa is on an island here. I think he's also oblivious to that. You are alone with the way that you feel, Tony. Okay. You can say, I bet nobody in that clubhouse has a problem with what I'm saying. I will take that bet. Whatever you want to wager, buddy, I will take that bet, because you are wrong and you are on an island with this. And here, to borrow a catchphrase from our friends from the 108 Chirizzi, here's the thing. In Chicago, especially White Sox fans, we want to air out our grievances and move on. And that would happen if the White Sox were traveling to Detroit, Jim, or Cleveland. No, they are traveling to New York, and they are facing the Yankees. So now it's the New York media's turn Friday morning or Friday afternoon when they get a chance to talk to Tony La Russa. It is now their turn to go after Tony and see what reaction that they can get out of him and write about. And this story is going to continue through the damn weekend. And then he gets friends to come visit him in Chicago as the St. Louis Cardinals come. And then it's going to be like a complete 180, where he's going to have a bunch of people praising for all the things that he did in St. Louis, or that's the reason why they'll do it. So this story, whether you want it to go away or not, is unfortunately going to continue at least one more day, because the New York media is going to want their shot at Tony La Russa. And we'll see if La Russa's tone changes after the off day. Maybe he realizes not having a game to worry about, and maybe catching up on the news that, okay, maybe I am alone on this island and I'm going to apologize to Yermín Mercedes and to the guys in the clubhouse and what I've said the last couple of days. That is how I feel, but I need to do this in a much more productive way. I need to handle this internally moving throughout the entire season. Hopefully we don't have this situation again, but it's still a long season. And that's what I'm hoping to hear from Tony Friday afternoon when he meets with the New York media. But if he doubles down again, if he doubles down again, Jim, it's okay. It's 26 against one. Go 26 White Sox players. I don't care about the manager.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that reaction from him. I'm seeing more of the same. I think he's set in his ways, and this is very important to him. It's more important to him than, something that should be important, which is making sure his players aren't getting thrown at and targeted. So, yeah, that's he just strikes me as a weird dude with a different set of priorities, just like Jerry Reinsdorf is weird and has a different set of priorities that nobody matches. They're both kind of insulated from public pressure in the same way. That, in La Russa's case, it kind of shows when you have the legal problems he's had, and you're not exactly apologetic, or at least, don't admit there's a deeper problem there and you just try to look past it. I think that's kind of how he'll treat it. Just, ultimately he's right. His ring says he's right, and he's not going to admit it, that admit weakness. And he's fine. And also with his Cardinals days, he's very comfortable being on people's bad side, whether it's his own players. Usually he would take that bad side in the form of benching guys who didn't feel like they deserved to be benched, or, getting unproven players to play it over prospects, or blocking highly touted prospects because they didn't play the game the right way, and then use scrappy veterans over them. But either way, he would create some friction, but it was for just playing time reasons or roster reasons, or for what he felt was the good of the team. This is for the good of how he envisions baseball. And that's that feels like he should be working for the league. He should have Joe Torre's job. If he's focusing on that, league matters and being the guardian of baseball of his generation. That's not, you're managing a team in 2021 with millennials and Gen Zers. Players several generations under him. That's not his job anymore. That's, his task right now is managing the players who have been produced in this environment and making sure that they're playing well, that they've been in positions to win, and, being protected. And, the thing too, you mentioned he's more focused on unwritten rules than written rules. And I'm thinking of times where he the Matt Foster game where he left Matt Foster in and he felt terrible about it. You didn't have Foster throwing him on the bus and said, "I don't know why I was out there that long." And even Giolito, he slipped up when he was on the mound and he said that he had nothing left, but then he corrected himself quickly and said that, it was still his inning. If he's on the mound, it's his job. But, basically they were put in positions to fail. They failed and, they didn't throw him under the bus. Not that they would, and not that, it's the power disparity. That they can't, but just they've had to cover for him multiple times, and they've had to say, they've had to bite their tongues multiple times for mistakes he's made. And apparently the Liam Hendricks thing, people in the dugout were telling him, what the rules were, and he wasn't getting it or something. But either way, just there've been occasions where he's out and out screwed up and put players in positions to fail, and just he's had to apologize and, self-flagellate, but it's not, that's his choice.
I agree with you that Tony La Russa should be working for the league, mm-hmm. or he could do commentary on MLB Network. If you want to be the guardian of the game, go work for the league. You got to be the guardian of the Chicago White Sox. Somebody throws at one of your players, you got to defend your guy. Okay. You got to deal with your Mercedes for the entire 2021 season. And it's expected to be a long season now with the way that this season has started. That's all we ask. But he's failed multiple times and he keeps doubling down. And now it's the New York media's turn on Friday. And we'll see if he doubles down a third time. And
New York Post already had a story about how Clubhouse is turning on him, and I wouldn't believe it's New York Post, also a reporter's name I didn't recognize. So just why would they but either way, it's started already with vaguely, thinly, fabricatedly sourced stuff. So once the actual good reporters in New York come into the picture, it's gonna flesh out a little bit.
Yeah, they are sharks. Tony La Russa is chum. They are going to be swimming. They're going to be in that Zoom meeting. It is going to be interesting. We got this comment that came in through our YouTube as far as feed. And thank you guys for posting as far as your comments. And for those that are listening to the podcast feed, you get an opportunity to miss out on this from the live stream. But I wanted to read this question because CC Sabathia, he had a response, Jim, and I wanted to get your feedback on it. Michael just posted in the comment section, CC Sabathia nailed on this. If you don't back your team, why are you the manager? Now, Michael add in a little extra verbiage there, which
Sabathia did.
Sabathia, I think, cussed out Tony La Russa more on his podcast than I did on Twitter Spaces. And that was a lot of cussing on my part. But, you know, back to as far as this generation, you know, CC Sabathia is being very vocal and he's got great insight because, you know, he's a recent retiree as far as in the majors. And he's been pretty consistent from the beginning that this was not a good hire by the White Sox to bring in Tony La Russa. He is not going to mesh with the players in that clubhouse. And Sabathia, he went on a tirade about this specific situation. I also love that he said that the Twins suck. that was maybe one of my favorite parts of the podcast. But how do you feel about somebody like CC Sabathia, who's got, you know, he's got a lot of credence to him. And, you know, there's still people around the league that really look up to him. They consider him a future Hall of Famer. When you hear someone like CC Sabathia have that type of response to the way that Tony La Russa has handled this situation, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's kind of one Hall of Famer baseball person to another. Just probably in 5 years, Sabathia will be eligible in 2024, so in a few years. But yeah, he's 40, so not a millennial. I think he's the last of the Gen X. So I guess he would have the license to be more old school. But yeah, he was pretty much correct. I think my favorite part was describing saying Tyler Duffy's weird ass. That was my favorite part, just because Tyler Duffy is just something's off with that guy, and just
they gave up three runs and yeah, that was first game, the doubleheader,
tested his suspension, and so he's still on the team and he paid the Twins back by giving up three runs in an inning. So yeah, just good for him. But yeah, the thing with unwritten rules and retribution, retaliation and such is like, you know, normally you do it, you know, if you're going to do it, you typically do it with the first pitch the next time you see him, you know, and the batter's kind of, you know, he's prepared for it. He's ready to look inside and protect himself accordingly. But when you wait like a couple of at bats, you know, like several innings into the game, a few pitches later, and then Tyler Duffy, who just likes, like, he's the guy who got, he started the whole Tim Anderson against the league thing. Mm-hmm. Because back in 2016, Anderson pirouetted out of the box on a Duffy pitch on a homer that he knocked out to left. And then Duffy stared him around the bases and Ryan O'Rourke threw at him later in the game. And, you know, Duffy, complained about to the media afterwards saying that, you know, he stared at it. And, you know, he's basically wired that way and complains a lot about, you know, players showing him up. And for a while, like that's because he sucked. And then he got good. And then he's like, well, you know, now you're better than the hitter. So you can do it in kind, if you feel wrong, like you can strike him out and then stun on him, or, you know, just, you know, scream a little bit to make up for it. But now he's back to kind of come full circle back where he was early in his career, where he's right now actively terrible. And just I was glad to see Sabathia call him out, and yeah, just I'm enjoying the accumulation of asses, because, you know, Tim Anderson called Brad Keller weak ass, and I have CC Sabathia calling Tyler Duffy weird ass. I hope that we keep adding to this, because I do like ass as a suffix for adjectives. It just adds some punch that I think is welcome in baseball language.
Well, again, the Chicago White Sox are in New York. They'll be playing in the Bronx against the New York Yankees. We will be previewing that series later in this episode. But to just quickly recap as far as this past series for the White Sox against the Minnesota Twins, they should have swept Minnesota. They had a 4-0 lead in game two. They had a 4-2 lead going into the eighth inning. It is the third such loss this season where the White Sox have had a lead in the eighth inning or later, and the bullpen was not able to lock it down. So while we can be happy that the White Sox are 26-16, their record would be awesome. I mean, we're talking, if they could shut those three games down, we're talking about a 29-13 White Sox team after the first 25% of the season. That's crazy. And they would be the talk of the league for a different reason than their manager. But they lost that game in game two. So it's the rubber match, and it's Lucas Giolito, and he's given up 18 runs in his last 24 innings. He gives up a home run to Nelson Cruz in the third inning after really not having great command or control of his pitches in the first two innings, Jim. And it seemed like after that home run that he allowed to Nelson Cruz that he focused, he got into rhythm, and at the end of that game, after eight innings, Lucas Giolito struck out 11 batters. He walked three. He only allowed two hits, both of them to Nelson Cruz. Nobody on the Twins roster that day had a base hit. And it's that type of bounce back performance we've been hoping to see from Giolito since he had the meltdown in Boston.
Yeah, it was the changeup that he had that allowed him just to lean on it and buy himself a couple innings. Because when he showed up in the first inning, spraying his fastball, walking leadoff guys, changeup was off too. The slider was actually pretty good. That's another point in his favor for the start, something he didn't have before. But he had ways to take focus off poor fastball command. And that was something that had eluded him previous starts to where, like, you know, fastballs down the middle were getting smoked, and he just had to rely on that because nothing else was working for him. The changeup was fading out. Slider was just, as he said, a cutter. He described it as like a pitch that was just barely moving, and a contact pitch, and a very loud contact pitch for a lot of them. So having the sharper slider, the good snap to it, getting, you know, a good back foot slider, which is a pitch he doesn't typically throw, put that in the hitter's heads. The changeup was the back to the fluttering one we talked about, where he can just throw it high in the zone, and basically, like, hitters are taking running starts at him and whiffing. Just they can't time it, they can't gauge it, they can't see it right, and that's something that hadn't been there. And then the fastball command showed up, and that's how he got to go eight innings. Like, even if his fastball command wasn't there, he probably still could have gotten six. Like, he could have just, you know, worked some extended at bats, deeper counts. The pitch count might have racked up a little bit, but he would have avoided, based on the way that changeup was floating on him, like the hard contact. It might have been a lot of foul balls, but, you know, the at bats would resolve with non-hits. So I think that's what I like the most. And then the fastball showing up with the slider being an active weapon too, that's how you get eight innings, and that's how Nelson Cruz gets the only two hits. So that was a pleasure. And that's the kind of, you know, that's kind of start we hadn't seen, the kind of like stopper start we hadn't seen. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was a stopper, not only for, you know, potential series loss for an opponent that they want to keep down, but also like a stopper for all the Tony La Russa stuff too, because they got to leave Minnesota with the win. They're all dressed like Yoan Moncada, got on the plane, took some funny pictures and funny Instagram videos. And that was a good palate cleanser.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. So it's great to see Lucas Giolito bounce back for the White Sox. And talking about this Twin series, we would be remiss if we didn't mention Lurie Garcia. I know you just wrote about him on SoxMachine.com. Lurie Garcia had a good series, Jim, for the White Sox against the Minnesota Twins. We were hoping that somebody would step up with the absence of Jose Abreu missing the series because of his right ankle inflammation. But Lurie, I mean, is this just he had good three games and let's not count on him all the time? Or do you think that this is something that's building up as far as his play after he struggled so badly to start the season?
It seems like something that's, you know, basically like he's getting back to his old self. And I think, you know, it's hard to tell with him just because he had the thumb injury last year, the surgery last year. So, you know, there's that element of a hand injury in his recent past that could sap production. So that's a variable that other hitters don't have, but he's had a couple of different forms over his White Sox career. And like the early part of his White Sox career, when he was barely hanging on and bouncing between Charlotte and Chicago, was like he was a switch hitter, but neither of the swings looked good. Like just a lot of misses on pitches in the zone, just like almost like he didn't understand his swing plane. It kind of reminds me of like when somebody doesn't know where the pinata is and they're just swinging under it. That's kind of how his swing often looked. Just, hanging changeup, sliders in the zone, just swinging under it, swinging over it, topping balls that are there. Like just, and that's the mode that he took this, the first couple weeks of the season. And I didn't know whether that was the hand injury or whether it was just him adopting some old bad habits that we hadn't seen in years. But either way, we've seen that guy before, which made me think that, we can't really see that guy much longer because that guy is not a major leaguer. That guy goes down to Charlotte and comes back when there's an injury. So the fact that he came back and it's hard to tell too, because he came back after like 4 days off. Like he played on a April 20th and then he played on April 25th. So that might be time for something that's aggravating him to heal, or that could just be something to go back in the cage or look at video, just see what he's doing wrong and reassess. But either way, he had like a little bit of a breather to reassess himself. And now he's making contact. Like I posted a chart in this Garcia post I had, just talking, you know, basically showing his WOBA's weighted on base average and it rising over the course of the season. And then you're seeing the contact rate in the zone, basically step by.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A step with it along the way, going from, you know, it's different scales, but basically like Garcia, you know, five games in the season, his contact and pitches in the zone was like 75%, which is terrible for a guy who hits with no power, especially like if you're going to see that kind of lack of contact on strikes, it's usually guys who are swinging for the fences every time and eventually capitalize. Like when he's hitting 160 and slugging 190, that's pretty much a useless player. And that's why, and I think he knew that too, which is why he bunted every time there was a runner that he could bunt over. Like he was giving himself up because, you know, and that's me, something telling me just, you know, watching him, like him telling me through the screen, like something's not right. I don't like the way I'm swinging. I don't think I'm giving the offense a chance if I swing the bat. So I got to bunt. I got to think like a pitcher and just move a guy along, make my out productive. So that's what I felt like, something is wrong here. And that he came back after 5 or 4 days off, 5 days later, and started looking better. That makes me think that maybe something was bothering him that is not bothering him right now. And now he's back to his useful self, which is like, you know, maybe you don't want him as the everyday center fielder, but you like him as a backup center fielder, shortstop, second baseman who can play 2 to 3 times a week. You love him in that role. And if he has to get stretched out a little bit more because of injury, that's not the worst thing in the world.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's take a look at the American League Central standings after the White Sox series win. The Chicago White Sox, again, are in first place with a 26-16 record. Cleveland is in second place at 23-18. Kansas City's at 20-22. Detroit, the Detroit Tigers, are one of the hottest teams in the American League. They have won 8 of their last 10 games, including winning 3 in a row. They are 17-26, and this was before the doubleheader in Anaheim. But the Minnesota Twins are currently 14-28. The screen on our YouTube channel says 14-27, but the Twins lost game 1, 7-1 of their doubleheader. So after that game in Minneapolis, the Twins also had a flyout, and they had to go to Anaheim to make up some of the games that they missed out because they got hit with the coronavirus bug. So that's why they had a random doubleheader against the Angels this week, and then they got to fly back to Cleveland and have a 3-game series against Cleveland. So things don't get easier for the Minnesota Twins. And for the White Sox, again, they're going to New York. We'll talk about that series in a moment. But I want to talk about a general baseball as far as news, because we have seen 2 doubleheaders this week, Jim. And a very simple question. The no-hitter. Too many?
Yes. Pretty much, like, just it was funny. I went to the Nashville Sounds game on Wednesday night. Really didn't check my phone all that much. Just posted pictures of Yolmer Sanchez and Ryan Goins and Jonathan Lucroy and all the old friends I saw there, and just enjoying a nice evening out. And then I turned on the. We left in the ninth inning. After ninth inning, went to 10, but we had to go. Get the dog out and mm-hmm. So listening to the radio of the game on the way home and heard Corey Kluber throw a new hitter. Just like no. I'm glad Carlos Rodon threw his early because he got to, I think he got to enjoy it. The league got to enjoy, the story of him, like achieving what people thought he could achieve when he was drafted. Like that was the kind of future people saw for him. So I was happy that he got the whole redemption story and got to enjoy his 24 hours. But like Spencer Turnbull does it and like, oh, Spencer Turnbull, yeah, good for him. And then Corey Kluber is like, well, what did Spencer Turnbull actually accomplish? So I just feel bad for guys who should be at the top of their game. It's kind of like, it's almost like if, a golf course changed like one of its holes in a par three from like, I don't know, like 4 inches wide to like 4.5 feet wide. And then they got like four holes in one in like a weekend. And people who were excited about it the first time, just like, oh, that feels kind of cheap now. However, I think it's maybe good in a way, just if it paints like, Steve Stone and to his credit, like he's been very open and, given that usually takes like pro pitcher stances, usually kind of in jest to as a foil to Benetti, but he'll often take pro pitcher stances. But in this case, he's saying, no, move the mound back. See what they're doing in the Atlantic League and minor leagues and move it back because this is not, you're not seeing the athleticism in the game. And I think that might be a harder sell if, these no hitters are 1 and 2 hitters, just because, you don't have the, just the out and out historical blip. Like you can say like, oh, there are more 2 hitters in baseball this year than another year in history. And that just doesn't resonate the same as no hitters and mobbing the mound every night and seeing no hitter alerts on MLB Network or coming across your at bat app and just being like, you're looking at like again, like just that's
right.
That's weird. And I think that does cheapen the feed a little bit for fans. Like it doesn't cheapen it for the players, the people involved, but I think if Rodon threw his this weekend, our story is different. Like the story we write, the story we talk about is different than the one we talked about and wrote about when it happened. And I think especially when it's like the same teams being victimized, like the Indians and the Mariners, like that's also weird. It's like a 1-2 punch of like undermining an accomplishment. Because I remember when it was the Tim Lincecum come era and the Padres were the ones getting no hit and people would say like, oh, does no hitting the Padres count? Like, does they even count? Like, and it's kind of the same thing right now with the Mariners and they have 2 of those teams serving that role. And that's troubling if you have 2 teams that are just, walking examples of just how tough it is for teams to find offense or, partially like, in the case of the Mariners and such, like teams not trying to build offenses, or in the case of Cleveland, the teams cutting payroll and trying to get by in the cheap with filling out an outfield. You have these different kind of flaws all kind of converging into this feat of a no hitter. And it creates a lot of uncomfortable conversations, I think, or ones that are hard. They're not the celebration that no hitters usually are. Celebrating a career, celebrating a feat, celebrating a defensive plays that kept it alive. Like it's something that normally should have that kind of special quality that right now I think does not.
And I want to get back to full circle here. Yeah, we're seeing a lot more no hitters and we are seeing offensive numbers that are the worst in our lifetime. And on Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm at @SoxMachine_Josh. This morning, I was openly asking on Twitter and we kind of trying to hold a symposium as far as advanced metrics, because a lot of the advanced metrics that we lean on when we try to build a narrative and explain what we are watching and what we are seeing day to day doesn't seem to match up, especially when it comes to weighted runs created plus based on the slash lines that we see. And, just for me, I'm just having a disconnect because maybe the offense is that bad. And maybe that is a side effect of what happened in 2020, just having a 60-game season. And now you're trying to turn around and play a 162 game season. But I figured that would be the pitching that would struggle, or we'd see, you know, a huge amount of pitching injuries, and there are injuries, but you know, we got Spencer Turnbull throwing no hitters. We got Wade Miley threw a no hitter. Corey Kluber throwing a no hitter. Absolutely. If it was 2016, 2017, but shoulder reconstruction, Corey Kluber throwing a no hitter. Yeah, but to come full circle, that's why with the Yoimer Mercedes home run, when it's 3-0, even when you're up big, you got to pad your stats, man, as a hitter, because look at the league right now. Numbers are down. So if you got a chance to hit a home run, because you never know, tomorrow you might get no hit.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I saw you mentioning or trying to figure out, like, you know, with the weighted runs created plus and various weighted stats, trying to figure out like a guy with an extreme line like Grandal is, like how his season is more productive than Tim Anderson's one. And I think it's kind of a, you know, there is science, but I think right now, given how extreme the league is, that you can put some art into the science and you can try to figure out, like, use your own, you know, draw your own conclusions and just see how it plays out. Because I think, you know, when it comes to sabermetrics and weighted, you know, it assumes a certain environment. And right now, I think that environment can't be assumed. And so you have to see how the game is unfolding in front of you and see how much hits do matter when hits are in short supply. And I go back to, like, you know, wins above replacement and how it's generally like a good stat, but like when you're pushing the margins. And like, I guess the example was like the White Sox right field and DH situation when like both positions are 3 to 4 wins below replacement, which is basically shattering the scale. You know, theoretically, if you go from like, you know, 0 for forever Daniel Polka to John Jay, and you go from like -3.5 wins to -1.5 wins, that should be a 2-win improvement. But like -1.5 wins is still terrible. That's still like actively hurting the team. So going from like really terrible to terrible, you can't register an improvement that way in a way that affects games. So I think when you have these sabermetric stats that assume like, you know, old guys don't hit 130 over the course of a full season, or guys don't, you'll never deal with an average that low, or you never deal with a walk rate this high, just based on, you know, historical precedent, that I think you do have to account for outliers, or at least, you know, maybe not discard them, or, but also just don't take them 100% at face value, because the environment is completely different. And that's why I was, you know, we talked about it earlier, and I've been just looking at what the league's doing for context and what the runners in scoring position struggles the White Sox were having and how extreme it seemed. But then on my Twitter feed, Yankees fans and Twins fans and a bunch of other fans were talking about how their teams couldn't hit with runners in scoring position. Just made me think like, well, okay, basically like the entire difference between a good and bad night with runners in scoring position is 1 for 7 and 2 for 8. That's kind of the line.
That is the margin. That's the threshold.
So that's how I kind of, you know, process the game now. Is just the White Sox are, you know, some numbers aren't good, but are they better than what other teams are doing? You know, is Grandal, his weird line, better than what other people are doing? You look at James McCann with the Mets and he's off to a terrible start. And that's the kind of season where just like, if he had that in Chicago, Lucas Giolito would have to pitch really, really well in order for that value to be maintained. So just, it's a weird year for a lot of guys, and you just have to keep an open mind and not, yeah, you know, if things are weird, just say like, well, is it weird elsewhere? And right now things are weird everywhere. And I think no hitters are a nice shorthand to say just how weird it is for pitchers and hitters.
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll see a no hitter this weekend, hopefully from a White Sox pitcher against the New York Yankees. And before we sign off, let's go ahead and preview this series between the White Sox and the New York Yankees. And the New York Yankees currently are 25-19. They have won 3 straight games. Offensively, a surprising number when it comes to runs per game. They're just slightly below 4 runs per game. You would think, as far as the New York Yankees before the season, this powerful lineup, they'll be right there with the White Sox as far as challenging for scoring the most runs in the league. They are struggling on the offensive side as far as to put up a lot of runs, and they're only averaging around 4 per game. the run prevention side has been good for the Yankees. They're only allowing 3.63 runs per game, so they have a positive run differential. And when we take a look at the probable pitchers for this series, Friday night, May 21st at 6:05 p.m. Central Time, Carlos Rodon will be on the mound for the White Sox against lefty Jordan Montgomery. And I can already hear the White Sox fans listening to this licking their lips, because we all like to see this White Sox team face left-handed starters. And then on Saturday, nothing brings you back to a sober mood than when you see Gerrit Cole on the mound against your favorite team. And he'll be starting for the Yankees. This is a 12:05 p.m. Central Time start. Opposing Gerrit Cole will be Dylan Cease. So, Dylan, I hope you have your A game, because you will need it, because Gerrit Cole is a tough matchup for this White Sox lineup. And then on Sunday, May 23rd, again, it is 12:05 p.m. Central Time, it's Dallas Keuchel on the mound for the White Sox, and he'll be going up against Jameson Taillon for the Yankees, former Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher. And again, he's got stuff that makes you wonder, Jim, that maybe he can give a hard time to the White Sox hitters, but he hasn't been pitching all that well. But when I look at this series between the White Sox and Yankees, the first thing that comes to mind is, I think this is a playoff preview. Not just any type of playoff preview. I think this is a preview of the American League Championship Series for 2021 between the White Sox and Yankees. And we're going to get a taste of that. And this weekend, we'll get a taste of it later in the season in August when they have the Field of Dreams game. I'm a bit surprised that ESPN did not pick up any of these games, or Fox Sports, especially with how well both teams have been playing, to really hype up as far as this matchup between the White Sox and Yankees in the Bronx. But I think for both fan bases, they know just how important this series is as an early litmus test to see just how real our teams are at the moment. And when it comes to the Yankees and White Sox, I think it's a playoff preview. Do you think it's a playoff preview?
Kind of. I think the teams are, but the shape of the teams are not. The White Sox are missing Robert and Jimenez, and the Yankees are missing, or either they're missing guys like Giancarlo Stanton's out, Hicks is out, but they also, like, they have guys like Gleyber Torres is coming off of COVID, and you know, the outfield's kind of a mess right now, and LeMahieu's doing all right. You know, they're catching the Yankees at a decent time. They're better than they were at the start of the season, but they're still not quite full strength. And you basically, I'm looking at the series and thinking, like, well, I hope Gerrit Cole isn't the next no hitter, just because his stuff has been that good. I mean, that's no knock on the White Sox.
It has been good.
But when, you know, they barely beat Matt Shoemaker, and then they go from him to their next ready being Gerrit Cole, it doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence. So I just hope they get their hit out of the way early, and then just, you basically they'll have to Dylan Cease to throw six pretty good innings to keep them in it. But it's, you know, based on the way they've been playing, they can afford a series loss. It's just more of a matter of, I would like to see a better showing against a right-handed pitcher, and I don't count that being Gerrit Cole. So maybe Sunday is their, Jameson Taillon, he's kind of a project for the Yankees. Like, he wasn't, they maybe thought there could be like a Gerrit Cole transformation based on former Pirates farmhand who's has some stuff but can't quite put it together, but it's been slow going for him. So that seems like the kind of gettable pitcher. And then you have Montgomery's lefty too. So if they can endure Saturday, that I think is going to be the big one, just for everybody's sake, because it could get ugly. But yeah, I think if anything, the well-played game in the finale for the Minnesota series after all the La Russa stuff, probably it was good preparation for going into New York, dealing with more La Russa stuff, but keeping their eye on the task at hand.
Yeah, this is why I'm a bit surprised that Fox Sports didn't pick up the Saturday game and push it to a 6:00 Central Time start, because Dylan Cease has been throwing the ball really well lately, and that would have been nice as far as to promote him to a national audience. But again, both games are at 12:00. We had scheduled a pregame show with our friends from the 108 Saturday morning. So we'll be tweeting that out as we'll meet up with them and look forward to that Gerrit Cole start. You know what the Gerrit Cole start is for me, Jim? This is my case study on why the White Sox need another left-handed hitter in the lineup. This is why the White Sox need to make a trade before the end of July. That's That's what I'm hoping to see, you know, because if they perform well against Gerrit Cole, maybe they'll give the impression of, oh, we don't need another bat. We're fine. But I just don't have a good feeling, because it's just not that Gerrit Cole gets a lot of strikeouts. Gerrit Cole's not walking anyone. So He's going to challenge these White Sox hitters, especially the righties. If they're going to win this game, I can't see Yasmani Grandal having a multi-walk game against Gerrit Cole.
Well, I hope he's in the lineup just for the unstoppable force, immovable object. The guy who doesn't walk anybody versus the guy who doesn't allow strikes to be thrown to him is going to be fascinating. But I think, you know, should they have like a good game against Cole and break up his run, they still have four games against Cleveland just right around the corner, basically, against their right-handed starters, and Shane Bieber is probably going to be in there. So that'll be probably a reminder of just how the White Sox fare against quality right-handed pitching. So they can't breathe easy, even if somehow they do come out ahead against Cole and Taillon.
But they do need to figure out how to win a game against a caliber pitcher of Gerrit Cole. Yeah. Because When it comes postseason time, if you're in game one or if you're in game seven, the Yankees would love to have Gerrit Cole on the mound against the White Sox. And the White Sox are going to have to find a way to do some damage against Gerrit Cole. And also a bullpen that also throws really well and helps with the run prevention side. That's the thing. The Yankees offense has not been producing at the level we thought they were going to be, But they do a really good job on the run prevention side. So these could be some low scoring games this weekend, but I'm hoping, fingers crossed, the Friday game goes really well for the White Sox and they build up some confidence. And even the bigger story from a White Sox perspective, will Jose Abreu play? And I hope that he does, because if he doesn't play this series, Jim, I'm going to start questioning the decision-making of the White Sox in the sense of, well, if you knew it was going to be this bad, or if it was a 50-50 shot for him to even play the Yankee series, you probably should have just had him stay in Chicago and throw him on the injured list and be like, we'll see you for the St. Louis series.
Get a left-handed bat in Gavin Sheets.
Yeah, get a left-handed bat in the lineup and, you know, Gavin Sheets, give him a 10-day try and not have Jose Abreu flying with an inflamed right ankle. But hopefully Jose Abreu does play this weekend. That'll be a big boost and give the White Sox even a better opportunity to do some damage against Gerrit Cole on Saturday. But it should be a fun series. These next two series are going to be good for the White Sox as far as good tests, because the St. Louis Cardinals are also playing some really good baseball, and they'll be next when the White Sox come from New York to Chicago for that series. And then the Memorial Day weekend series is against the Baltimore Orioles. So a little bit of a breather after two tough series for the Chicago White Sox. But that will do it for this episode of Sox Machine Live. For everyone that watched the live stream on our YouTube page at youtube.com/Sox Machine, thank you guys so much. And if you don't get a chance to watch the live stream because life, family, work gets in the way, or mainly you might just want to listen to us talk to you instead of watching us, I get that. But if you do want to watch us, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine. And you can subscribe to the Sox Machine podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow us on Twitter. We are at Sox Machine. You can follow me on Twitter at @SoxMachine_Josh. If you enjoy our work and you want more, think about signing up on Patreon, where you get an ad-free version of the podcast and an ad-free version of the website, plus also exclusive content and first crack at our swag items. We have plans starting at $2, $3, $5, and $10 a month. So if you like our work and you want more, go to patreon.com/Sox Machine to sign up today. And one last thing for those that are watching the live stream at 8:30, our friends from the 108 will start streaming their podcast. There's a lot of, let's call it angst, Jim, with White Sox season tickets, as the White Sox have announced they are expanding capacity. It'll be 60% capacity at Guaranteed Rate Field for the upcoming series. Memorial Day weekend tickets are going to go on sale this upcoming weekend. There's a lot of questions in regards to White Sox ticketing. You'll want to watch and listen to the From the 108 podcast. The guys have all the deets there. Again, that show is going to start at 8:30 p.m. Central Time, and you can subscribe to their show at youtube.com/From the 108. in case you missed the live stream, because they'll have good information as far as those tickets. And again, we'll talk to them on Saturday morning before the White Sox and Yankees game. But again, the Sox Machine Live is a production of SoxMachine.com, your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball. Alongside Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for watching and listening.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com/safety, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.